Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Shooter's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. I'm joined here by my co-host Frank Gao, and tonight we're speaking to a personal friend, Robert Cole. I met Robert through another friend, Carlo, a little over a year ago when we went out to his place to do some training, and we quickly became friends, training partners, and instructors together. Robert served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman, and whenever he got out, he went to work at Team One Network, where he is the director of training. Robert is methodical and detail-oriented when it comes to designing and instructing, which are two very important aspects to being an instructor. Robert, real quick, can you kind of give a quick introduction about yourself?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me on. So I joined the Marine Corps back in 2007, so kind of a weird period for the Marine Corps, Iraq kind of winding down, Afghanistan ramping up at that point. And I was a security force pogue. So I started off in Marine Corps Security Force Battalion Bangor, Washington, guarding strategic assets. While I was up there, I ended up becoming the pre-orientation instructor, which was kind of a cool instructional gig. Not standing post anymore is one of the better duties up there. 2010, I went to 1st Battalion, 5th Marines as a young corporal, where I deployed to Sangin, Afghanistan in 2011. 2012, I went on the 30 worst Mew, traveling around, got to see some cool spots, got to look at Guam through a window. And then after that, 2014, I finally got a nice deployment and, did, the Marine Rotational Force Darwin, Australia deployment. We were the first ones to do that, which was a cool, unique experience.
I mean, is that even really a deployment?
Oh, no. One of our mission essential task lists as a battalion was to conduct Liberty operations. It was amazing. It was a great time.
To be Australia fair, there is a way to fail that mission.
Oh, yeah. No. Some Marines did.
Hey, as long as no civilians ended up dead, I call that a win.
Fair. That's about the... The Coast Guard and Embassy were involved during one incident, but it was a good one. After that fun little party, I ended up getting the monitor had other ideas for me, so I ended up at the basic school in Quantico, Virginia. Started off there in the infantry platoon, beating my head against a desk, and ended up getting hooked up, if you will, working up in the Regimental 3 shop. As the assistant regimental, the assistant operations chief. Funny enough, it's the same guy that got me that pre-orientation instructor gig, got me the assistant operations chief gig at TBS. And then, like all enlisted Marines, that's where I went to get out of the Marine Corps and did not re-enlist and stay in after Quantico.
I mean, I think the attrition rate whenever Marines go to Quantico is pretty fucking high.
I attribute part of that is they moved to the East Coast so they can be close to home for their last duty station is a lot of people, not me, but I attribute it to that for a lot of folks.
Well, I'll put it like this. I have a very good friend who was in for 17 years. Gunny. Like, originally his plan was to go all the way to 30 years and retire as a sergeant major. Straight up got out at 17 years. Didn't Terra, didn't retire. Just got
that
out.
Hurts.
And I mean, I'm gonna leave it at that. But
Quantico.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a lot of opportunity out here. That's why a lot of people try and retire out of here. You know, there's it's the world of government contracting and government jobs and, you know, big government. DC is right here. So there's just it is the land of opportunity whenever you're getting out of the military. So kind of talking about that. So you got out after you got out from Quantico. So how did your time in the military carry over and complement everything that you do for Team One Network? And what is your current position? Well, we already said what your current position is, but how did all that kind of carry over and complement each other?
Really early on up in Washington, getting introduced to formalized training, getting cut my teeth, if you will, as an instructor, learning how to talk to people, learning how to get student buy-in. I was fortunate enough. I had a good NCO leadership at the time, mentoring me, teaching me how to do that stuff. My time in 1-5 was just a real world experience. When I was on the 31st MU, we were attached to the recon platoon for that. So we weren't even a BLT asset. We were a MU asset. So we got to go do a lot of cool, fun, specialized training. Again, getting some real world experience, some good training experience. And then in Quantico, as the assistant operations chief, I was the guy dealing with all logistical support for training. I had to be knowledgeable about kind of a general broad topic of it all so I could know how to support it, learning how to think through training the right way and back planning everything. Again, it was a pretty easy transition over to what I started doing as the training coordinator. Now as the director of training, still the same thing. It's just learning how to talk civilians, speak to manufacturers, yet still talk law enforcement to the police officers and still talk military to military folks.
Do you find it any different talking, like, because in the military we have our own fucking language? But and cops are very much the same way. They have their very own type of language. And yeah, there are a lot of military personnel that get out and go to the police departments and everything, but have you found it easier? Or have you found it relatively easy talking to police departments and training agencies like that?
Yes and no. The big thing there is just mission set. It's a different realm. It's a different role, law enforcement to military. So that part's there. It's the same language, different dialect.
How is on the training side of it? Like, I even understand that it's a different type of training, different mission. Altogether, did you find it difficult or at all whenever it came to having to learn their requirements and how to properly instruct them?
Not really. A lot of the security forces training I actually got was kind of geared towards law enforcement. It wasn't law enforcement by any stretch of the imagination, but a little more target discretion, a little more less lethal controlling as opposed to throwing a flashbang as opposed to throwing a frag grenade when entering into a room. A lot of it too, Team One Network is this way, I'm this way. I don't step out of my lane. I know what I'm good at. I'm good at facilitating training. I'm good at creating training. Absolutely, I'm a firearms instructor and can teach people how to shoot a gun, but I'm not out there teaching police how to write reports, things like that. I have instructors for that. That's what they do. So again, I stay in my lane with it, where again, not a police officer, and knowing that up front kind of helps that communication piece.
So Team One Network, which is kind of why we're talking about this today. Can you tell us about it? Like, what is Team One Network? And how did they get their beginnings in the training space and how it evolved and grew?
So it's a big question, long answer here. So short version, Team One Network, who we are, what we are, we're a military and law enforcement training company. We started in 2003. Now to back that up, kind of how we got started in 2003, y'all started with a gentleman named John T. Meyer Jr. He is the president and founder of Team One Network. Starts with him actually in the Air Force veteran. Got out and started as a DOD police officer at Picatinny Arsenal up in New Jersey. Up there, started their SWAT team with them, was a team leader, grew his resume. Then in 88, he was hired with HK here in Virginia. So he was hired on there, quickly worked his way up to the VP of International LE Sales in the International Training Division. So he ran them. And again, during that time frame, they were the standard across the country, law enforcement training, They were obviously known for the MP5 was the hot ticket item back then. Everyone was carrying them. Everyone wanted to go to an HK MP5 class. They also did other classes, SWAT operators, tactics classes, things like that. But again, very focused on HK product, HK guns during that training division. 2003 happened. HK sold, let John go. All amicable, all on good terms, but they decided to put their own people into that position as opposed to Meyer. And so John founded, saw a hole in the market, if you will, or in the industry, and started founded Team One Network. What we are in the industry, how we kind of started was we're a training division in a box for manufacturers. We offer them a turnkey training solution. So instead of a company like HK having their training division, having full-time employees, facilitating all of that, they can outsource it to us. We have all those things in place where, again, we have the instructor base, we have the credentials, we have the experience, the logistical support, the administrative support to put on training all over the country. That's an easy solution for these manufacturers. At the beginning of Team One, it was the basic law enforcement classes, the pistol, rifle, firearms instructor, SWAT operator class, stuff like that. But as things kind of started to grow and build a name for the company, John's name is quite infamous in the industry, which helped that a lot. But again, as Team One grew, more sponsors came on, more sponsors had new different products led to new different classes led to new hosts, new instructors, and new sponsors. And then it kept growing and kept growing from there. A lot of stuff, again, like red dots, it's the hot topic of law enforcement training right now across the board. We've had red dots in our class since I started working for the company. We've always provided them to our students to shoot, but they weren't real well known. So it was kind of a fun oddity to get a play with. And then now we're seeing it become more and more common. Hey, we already have this. It's very easy for us to grow our portfolio. Here's another class offering that Team One Network has for you guys, pistol mounted optics instructor. Some other big parts that really made us grow who we are is our instructors. We've built an amazing, John has built an amazing team of instructors that we're always adding to and growing. But again, our instructors are what make us who we are. We try and diversify classes with them, again, from autism awareness and how to respond better to it in the law enforcement space to, again, firearms instructors, to shoot house, live fire shoot house training instructor courses. And the last big thing that made us who we are is our hosts, like the departments that regularly ask us to come out and do training that are asking us, hey, we want this kind of custom one-off course. They're the ones who, again, are bringing us out there and letting us do these classes.
So my next question, you've kind of answered some of it, but Team One Network's mission statement, to paraphrase, is to provide the most practical, intense, and realistic training in the world. What do you guys do to train and prepare law enforcement and military for events that can change their life forever? I mean, having the right instructors, I know, is key to do that. Having a standard is key to doing that. But what do you guys do to prepare those instructors for those events?
So our number one overarching priority is officer survival. That's our mindset going into every class, every situation. That's what we're based off of, is giving that officer the tools necessary to go deal with whatever's thrown at them and get home to their family safely at the end of every shift. That's our number one goal. I don't think you're ever able to prepare someone fully for that life-changing event.
No.
And again, my approach is, let's give them the tools. Let's make a decision maker out of students. And again, that starts at that instructor level as well, preparing and teaching instructors how to create decision makers, is giving people the tools to respond with how they deem appropriate. The more tools they have, the more options they have, maybe the easier the course of action they might have in that life-altering situation. Our instructors, we bring subject matter experts in. We bring people in that are passionate about their topic. All classes are peer-reviewed.
diversity of instruction. We have all the kind of our classes. We will have Ambient that is building the outline, designing the class, putting the framework together. Once that framework's together, then we bring in all of our instructors from Washington State, Florida, some international guys, and we just peer review it. We go through the course. We sanity check stuff. Does this make sense? Is this applicable? Does this five-day dream course that we just designed, can we really shrink that down to 2 days? Or, hey, is this two-day workshop that we're trying to put together deserve a full 5 days worth of training? And again, just drawing from those hundreds and hundreds of years of experience combined that all of our instructors and advisors have. The other big thing, and it's a topic in law enforcement, is training hours. The best way to prepare someone is good training for that situation. Well, how do we train? Well, in law enforcement, it's tough. There's not as many hours available like there is in the military world or in the shooting world, where that's all you get to do is shoot at targets all the time to get better. The law enforcement space, they have so many topics and so many bullet points that they have to train on regularly that it's time consuming, and they only have so many hours and they're understaffed. So again, our big thing are we're trying to give those instructors tools to then go out and teach their guys in a timely, realistic manner. So then again, officer survival, they can go home at the end of their shifts.
No, that's a very concise answer. And you guys travel, you yourself travel all over the country, but you also have instructors around the country. Is previously stated, how many instructors do you currently have on staff, and how do you qualify or onboard your instructors for classes that they're required to teach?
So first thing, none of our instructors are required to teach anything. Not the frame of mind that we go about with our instructors. Again, we're called Team One Network for a reason. We are a network. We are a team. In a team as one, we create our network. We have about 60 instructors and advisors all over the country. Some international. I got a couple of guys over in Europe. We have a Canadian. We have a Australian that's an American here. We have guys from Washington State to Florida. The military world, compare it to Lejeune to Pendleton, not very much different in a normal infantry grunt unit, doing the same stuff, same mission set, same training templates. You go to Washington State as opposed to Florida or New Jersey or Texas or California, their training looks so drastically different, and it's a different mindset of policing depending on where they're at. Again, trying to bring in all of those different points of view is super important to us. Our onboarding process for new instructors, they're all very, very unique, each instructor based off of background, experience, stuff like that. But the most general kind of one rule of thumb that we always hold, you attend the class as a student is the first check in the box. Again, we want you as a student, seeing what the training is, seeing it from the point of view of student. I don't want you helping out with boxes or moving targets. Be a student in our class. Once you're a student in the class, everything's jiving well, you like what we're putting out there, you like the class, you think you have something to add or bring to the table for a class, then we'll bring you out to teach as a secondary instructor. So you'll come out and assist the primary, again, moving targets, moving boxes, making sure the paperwork's in order, learning the whole process from me scheduling to class wrap up, everything's done. Once that happens, again, everyone's still meshing well. We like your attitude. We like how you teach. We like your point of view on stuff. Then we'll bring you out as a primary instructor. You'll be the lead instructor on a class, but we'll have a secondary there that's already teaching it on their own, to kind of catch you if you fall sort of thing, making sure everything's staying on track, answering those weird questions that come up once every three or four classes kind of a thing. A big part of that is learning how to represent the company, but also a big part of it, learning how to represent our manufacturers. With how we partner with our sponsors, we're out there representing their product, their companies. So we have to do that in a certain way and make sure we're on par with what they're wanting to put out there. But yeah, that's kind of the onboarding process.
So talking about the instructors, and every instructor has different specialties, obviously. But based on the vast number of instructors that you do have, what are some of the course offerings that you guys offer?
So in our course catalog, we offer about 70 different courses and or workshops. Realistically, we teach about 20 of those pretty regularly.
Some of the big stuff that we do is armor training. So we, for our weapons manufacturers, Benelli, Ruger, Smith & Wesson, and Springfield Armory, we offer armor training on all their LE platforms. Again, in the LE military space, we don't deal with the civilian space when it comes to our armorers training. Now, the rest of our classes, again, whether that's emergency medicine, executive protection, firearms, firearms instructor classes, leadership and tactics, we offer a lot of different stuff. Our pistol-mounted optics instructor course is a three-day course that's been super, super crazy popular lately. We're scheduling those left and right. But again, right now, departments are transitioning over into red dots. It's one of those things. Hey, we need firearms instructors certified to teach this stuff. Mechanical breaching instructor class. It's another three-day class that's been very, very popular recently. We offer bigger five-day, like, pistol, rifle, shotgun instructor classes, kind of the standard firearms instructor offerings. We have a range master class. It's a very fun, unique class. Our shoot house instructor class. That's one of the ones I teach regularly, so I'm passionate about it. That's actually only a two-day class. And again, we're focused on how to be a good instructor. We're not there teaching left foot CQB tactics in our shoot house class. We're teaching you how to be a shoot house instructor. Another really big one that we do regularly for manufacturers is low light laser instructor training. So again, a department's getting new handheld flashlights, weapon mounted lights, stuff like that. If they're going with Streamlight, Streamlight's going to point them in our direction and we'll provide training on those products. The other thing that, you know, I end up doing these like one or two times a year is doing custom classes, and they're always fun. Again, it's whether it's a firearms instructor kind of cadre that gets a week of training for themselves, or whether they just a weird department's got a weird list of objectives that doesn't kind of fit in our cookie cutter classes. We'll just do a custom class. I bring in whoever's the subject matter expert from wherever I need to in the country and kind of have fun with the class.
So, I mean, that's a vast amount of classes, but and it's a lot of offerings for those departments. But more specifically, what role does the firearm industry take in supporting you for these different classes?
The industry as a whole is a big term, and especially I know a lot of people think of the industry and they think of firearms and the firearms manufacturers. To us, that's only a portion of what we do and who we are. Talking about the industry, our sponsors, they support us huge. They're always helping us out. That's how we're able to be who we are and be successful like we are, is because of our industry partners, our sponsors, and them supporting us. Our sponsors provide weapons, equipment, stuff like that. So at the end of the day, to provide that realistic, up-to-date training, our manufacturers are giving us products to go use in our classes. So whether that be a firearm, whether that's a new red dot, whether that's the latest and greatest hooligan tool from someone, Blackhawk or Rule Tech are the breaching equipments we use. Rule Tech makes this breaching door, the Kratos Elite door, their new one, that again, it's an amazing door, but because they allow us to use that, we can bring that out. And now I can put on a mechanical breaching class anywhere in the country because I have a portable door. So it's a win-win for us and our sponsors. The other big thing is the testing and evaluation piece to it. That's always a weird road, whether you're a social media influencer or actually making decisions on stuff. Sometimes we get to see new equipment, and whether that's just letting the manufacturer know, like, hey, yeah, this is great for law enforcement in this realm. This is how we would see to use it with, again, all of our instructors' input. Or even the case of we're very firm. If we don't believe in it, we're not going to support it. There's companies that have approached us with products that we don't believe in. So not interested. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've talked about Team One Network really operating, you know, across the country, really, you know, as a network. It's in the name. So with that being said, are you guys always looking to add instructors to the network itself?
Always. We are always looking for the new instructor. I have so many different ways of explaining Team One Network because we are multifaceted in a lot of different ways. I think of ourselves as somewhat of an instructor firm. So we just brought a guy on a couple of years ago from down in Florida, teaching an autism awareness, how to understand it, improve outcomes, and also a hostage negotiation class.
Again, it was a class he was teaching down in Florida, doing it a lot, very successful down there. He just didn't have the infrastructure, the marketing, the logistics to bring it nationwide. Mm-hmm. We brought him on board. Hey, go teach this class. We're trying to sell it all over the country. Again, always looking for new guys.
Okay. Yeah, that's really neat. Kind of a two-part question here, but are there parts of your instructor cadre that are part-time? Are there some of them that are full-time? And then how busy do some of them end up getting? Just question in general about the logistical part.
Yeah, so our instructors are independent contractors. At the end of the day, we don't have any full-time staff outside of myself and our training coordinator. But with that, our instructors, it varies on what you're teaching, how involved you are. Some of my guys are teaching 10 plus classes in a year. Some are teaching one or two classes. Classes kind of come in waves. It seems like all of our certifications are 3-year certs. So every 3 years, it's kind of a new trend, whether breaching is really popular right now or shield or et cetera. So that part comes in waves. It depends on who the active instructors are as they're being proactive. We had an instructor come on from New Jersey a couple of years ago, brought him on as an armor instructor. Now he's also teaching SWAT classes and our civilian red dot class that we just scheduled in Jersey and a law enforcement red dot class. So if you're proactive and out there selling classes and working with us all the time, then you're ending up teaching more classes because you're the one scheduling it and doing some of the legwork.
Okay. And then say for a single class, like what does the compensation model look like roughly?
So we do everything we can to take care of our instructors. Again, they are who make us who we are. Mm-hmm. We cover 100% of cost door-to-door travel. So the moment you leave to the moment you get back home, we're covering you on that. Our instructors charge us a daily teaching fee. And then we also cover travel on either day. So the travel day before the class, travel day after the class, we also compensate for that. Guys are taking vacation out of their day jobs to come to this stuff for us. Mm-hmm. If our instructors are out there scheduling classes, selling classes for us, we compensate for classes that get scheduled. When guys help us develop these classes, as new classes come up, we compensate guys for that. We also, again, really try to outfit our guys head to toe, give you all the equipment. You don't buy in Team One shirts from us so you can wear them during a class and represent us the right way. We give you the shirts, the pants, the gear, but we're able also to do that from our sponsors. Because our sponsors support us, we're able to take care of our instructors that way.
Okay. Yeah, really interesting to hear how that all works. You've talked about the rise of the acceptance of the red dot, specifically in law enforcement and military. So for the long, I mean, you've mentioned yourself, you guys had these red dots for a long time. And then all of a sudden there was this demand from law enforcement, military agencies with these pistol mounted optics. Where do you think that came from? Like, where exactly were they pulling just that? Like for the longest time, I think we're still dealing with people thinking that, you know, irons are the truth. But that has started to shift in the last decade. Where do you think that all started?
That's a can of worms too. I don't know what started the avalanche. It happened. What started it for Team One Network was Black Hawk designed a holster capable of accepting a red dot with a hood and a level 3 strap on it. The T-Series holster. They came out with that. We're like, ooh, that's cool. And they're like, hey, we want you to do a red dot class because this is coming. And then all of a sudden, everyone had a holster ready for red dots. And all of the departments were calling us left and right. Hey, we're trying to transition. What do we do? It was the same thing 10 years ago with weapon mounted lights. It's a new technology. It takes a while for it to buy in. As more people buy in, more people buy in. As it becomes, again, once shooting competition started it, I mean, red dots are not a new technology by any stretch. We're not redesigning them either. They're the same thing that they've been. An RMR is still an RMR.
Yeah.
I think some of it's that trickle down effect that you see in law enforcement. One of those weird things when you're in the military, Marine Corps, but you get the cutting edge stuff. That is the newest, latest and greatest technology for the most part, especially compared to the average Joe out there. And then you see the FBI adopt it. And then you see LAPD, NYPD, the big entities, agencies adopt the stuff. And then you start seeing forward-thinking departments start adopting it down in Florida that have the budgets to buy cool new toys like that. And it just slowly builds on itself and builds on itself. I think, you know, you talk to the average cop out there and they like, why wouldn't we go to red dots? You talk to any competitive shooter, why wouldn't cops be running red dots right now? Target focused, like it just makes more sense. Mm-hmm. I don't think people take into effect take into account the third and fourth order effects that actually go into transitioning a police department of 300 people to red dots. Mm-hmm. The price tag alone is one thing, but then, okay, we got new holsters. We have new guns. Probably we have people need to know how to work on these new guns and become armors and learn how to actually mount the red dots the right way. And then, okay, now what's our maintenance plan and maintenance schedule on these red dots? How often are we changing out batteries? What red dot are we going with even? To changing up people's draw stroke, to breaking some of those old iron sight habits that we just have to break with red dots. And then it comes down to training. And do we have the time to train it? And do we have the time to train it the right way? And then convincing someone that that battery-powered piece of glass up on top of your gun is solid and it is reliable. And here's a few drills of what happens if they break or if something goes wrong. There's drills of ways around it, just like there's a malfunction drill. We have a double feed. We know exactly what to do. If my ocular lens is clogged up with dirt or something, I know exactly what to do. It's coming and it's becoming more and more and more prevalent. It's happening, whether people like it or not.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're definitely not in the beginning of it. We're in the middle of it. And I think that was some very astute observations on just trends within the industry in general as they're adopting new technology. You did mention pistol mounted lights, now red dots. Do you see any other forms of technology experiencing the same level of acceptance and integration? New technologies come out all the time, but it feels like, especially, in military law enforcement, there has to be at least some level of reliability and capability demonstrated in the field before they actually embrace those new technologies. So do you see any of that happening, or are we still just getting our way out of the red dot phase?
No, there's always something new. Again, it's policing is different in even within the same state, different jurisdictions just have totally different mission sets, to put it in military talk, it just depends on the people, on the department, what their philosophy is on training, what their philosophy is on firearms training. There's other stuff out there that is, I'm seeing it more and more and more. Team One attends ILETA and ILEFI, some international fire instructor conferences, and we get to rub shoulders with a lot of instructors around the country with all these cool new fancy gadgets and toys. Mm-hmm. I think the electronic range systems like Milo range, stuff like that, I see them more and more in departments. Again, I'm all over the country, in and out of departments. I see them more and more. I see them using them more and more, which is great. I think a lot of different like marking cartridge weapons for reality training is another big thing that's coming out there technology wise. And that's like, we use a company called T4E. They're CO2 powered paintball guns that shoot either rubber, paintball, or powder rounds. But again, getting realistic training. They're adopting as new technology comes out. Some departments purchase it, some departments buy into it, others are just not interested in some of that stuff.
Okay.
VR is another interesting one that is, I've seen it coming around a little bit. Guys wearing the goggles with the guns. I don't think the technology is quite there yet. It's getting there for sure. And there's a time and place for it. Again, decision makers, making decision makers, reactionary reality scenarios, shoot, don't shoot kind of scenarios, a little more so in the law enforcement space too than the military.
So funny you mentioned that VR space. I was down back in December. I was down in this industry convention, think SHOT Show, but for nerds. It was nothing but technology, and it was military technology. They had all the different types of simulators out there for close air support, call for fire. You know, Milo was out there. And then there was another company out there, like all with VR type stuff. And this one company in particular had like the haptic suit that went over your body and the gloves and you, the weapons. And so you can define a specific area, like a 20 by 20 space or something as big as a warehouse. And, you know, it's not going to let you go outside of those bounds and bang into stuff. But you can create and design whatever scenario that you want, shoot, no shoot situations, moving for real and with other people there. And the technology, like you said, isn't completely there yet, but it's getting there. And it's really interesting how it is, because like the biggest thing whenever it comes to VR, it's finally allowing you to train in a VR setting, in a 360 type setting.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, again, in law enforcement, in the military is so easy because we had so much dedicated time. This is training time. This is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. In law enforcement, they don't have the hours like you would hope that they do sometimes. And it's just, it's condensing, it's making value out of what hours they do have training, and making it as realistic as possible. But again, getting outside of just the firearms mindset, that there's so many different things that the average patrol officer has to be capable and competent in doing, that even, I mean, we just developed a new patrol tactics instructor like course, that again, revisiting the basics, because we get so down the rabbit hole with some of these crazy new concepts and technologies and tools and stuff, that again, revisiting the basics is also just as important as all these new technologies.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. One last question about pistol mounted red dots. But those saw a lot of use in competition. Like I'm just looking at it, like technology wise and how it's progressed. You get some of the old school red dots that used to be on like the crazy open guns, and then you start to, obviously the RMR comes out, but then you see companies start to come out with these other optics that are clearly not as ruggedized, but have these larger apertures to make it easier to pick up the dot. Now you have enclosed emitters. So, I mean, I'm not going to put it all on the competition community, but they did see a lot of use in competitions, and now they're being used everywhere. Do you think that the law enforcement and military realm of training is going to become more open to influences from the outside, or has it always been?
I'd hope so. Again, the military and LE, we always lump them together for a lot of things in the industry. They're very different beasts. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'd love to say that I hope they're more open-minded to new stuff. We try to open people's minds in our training. But there's always been that kind of headbutt between competitive shooters and real-world training shooters. And I've never understood why that is necessarily. I think it's you're mastering your craft, you know. Whether it's social media influencers, whatever it is, I see more of it. I see more competitive shooting in the law enforcement space and vice versa. And again, they can complement each other a lot. Especially again, mastering your craft as a marksman, as a person who carries a gun. I think it's a lot of guys that are, John used to always talk about how they would have students pay their own way into courses. The department wasn't paying it, something like that, but someone out of their own pocket wanted to go take an MP5 class. So out of their pocket, they were going to do it. Now I'm seeing more, I still see that today. It's just different. And a lot of times the community I run with are doing competitive shooting. I want to support it. I know Team One this year, we're sponsoring an LE only shooting competition, Battle of the Badges, mm-hmm. August 24th in Christiansburg, Virginia. I hope they're open-minded to it. We are, again, dealing with the industry, the manufacturers. I think that they come out with stuff for both worlds, civilian, military, and law enforcement. And it's up to us as firearms instructors, law enforcement trainers, to figure out how, if it's applicable in the law enforcement space.
Yeah, that was very well said. Speaking of industry and also just firearms companies, you work with several of them, you know, Smith & Wesson, Benelli, Ruger. How do those relationships get established, and how important? I mean, you've talked about their support for Team One Network, but yeah. I'd imagine it's very important that they support what you guys do.
Absolutely. Each one's very unique. They're all equally important. We wouldn't be successful in who we are without our sponsors. Absolutely. Again, part of our network, 100%. But again, each one's unique. They all start in various different ways. Again, new products, new classes, new recommendations, meeting someone here. Again, offering that turnkey training solution. They have a need, a training problem. We're here to solve that problem for it. Again, always with the win-win kind of mindset for us. It's got to be mutually beneficial for everyone. They're all so unique, and it depends on the product, from whether it's Fix-It Sticks giving us some tools for our red dot class to use on the range, whether that's Smith & Wesson letting us teach their armorers classes for them, Blackhawk, Bushnell doing their red dot class with Trigicon and Streamlight as well. Streamlight's been a sponsor of ours since the beginning. They were our first sponsor, still a sponsor today, 20 years later. They are, again, just unique, individual, has to be win-win for everyone kind of a situation.
Okay, yeah. Really, really cool to see behind the curtain how those things work. If a department wants to get trained by Team One Network, what's the best way to get in touch and lock on some training?
So a few different ways to go about it. First thing, check out our website, teamonenetwork.com. On there, our schedule is posted. Our schedule is always getting classes added to it 24. So we don't post a schedule at the beginning of the year. And this is what it is. We're constantly evolving and adding more classes, throughout the year. If you want to bring training to your department and host a class, that's usually the best way to go about it. Hosting application on our website, very simple, easy. They can contact me, info@teamonenetwork.com. That's the best, easiest way to get a hold of us. Fill out that hosting application. We come to you guys, bring all the equipment necessary to run a training event. We just ask that those hosts provide us a facility, so a range, something like that. We bring all the targets. We bring all that stuff. We give our hosts 1 to 2 free seats in a class, depending on how many students get signed up. But again, all we ask is a facility and help marketing it, spreading the word about the class. And we do the rest of the work.
Very cool. But Robert, appreciate you coming on and talking to us about what you guys do and, you know, all the services that you provide. And at this time, you have anything else to leave the listener with?
No, thank you guys very much. And again, our big philosophy, A way, not B way. Don't be closed-minded. You can always learn something new.
For sure. Yeah, that's what, certainly what we're all about. For our listeners, if you have any other questions about Team One Network, feel free to hit up Robert, hit us up. We'll put you in touch. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.